aced those three words. Mikkel fought a laugh. Oh, you're in deep, deep. The catering manager appeared at the open elevator door, plastic cloches full of breakfast on her tray. She gave me an amused look, clearly having overheard everything. This was the exact reason I wanted to compartmentalise my life, keep Grace out of this place because I couldn't focus. And it wasn't only me who was painfully aware of it. Now my colleagues were noticing. I'm paddling, I said. And keep your voice down, please. If the charge nurse gets wind of this, the whole hospital will know by midday. A porter wheeled a patient by us, which Mikkel took as the perfect moment to say, tell your girlfriend you love her! I widened my eyes, watching him laugh. Nothing like a bit of peer pressure to get the job done. I opened the ward door at the precise moment he hollered, say it! I pulled back the curtain on bed 4. Mr. Graham Havas, a small man in his 70s. Transferred from an assisted living home in the New Forest a few weeks earlier, presenting with chest pains. His pacemaker implantation was scheduled for a few days' time. Say what? Mr. Havas said. He had one of those inquisitive voices. No matter what he said, he made the inflection of a question. It was rather confusing when you were trying to establish his vitals and every response to does this hurt sounded like he was guessing the answer. Nothing, Mr. Havas. I turned to give Mikkel an annoyed look, but all I could see was his back as he made his way further along the corridor. How are you feeling today?
Tired?
His yawn told me he was more confident in that response than he sounded. To be expected, I reassured him. I ran my finger along his chart. Bloods done last night. White count higher than preferred. Temperature up from yesterday, but not enough for concern. I grabbed the thermometer, replacing the disposable cap. Open wide, Mr. Havas, I said.
That nurse you were talking to?
He mumbled around the stick.
The one with braided hair?
Nurse Mikkel, I said. The number climbed higher. He told me you've got a new partner. Did he now? I mentally added that to the list of reasons Mikkel owed me a favour. Yeah, I wanted to set you up with my granddaughter. She gets all flustered every time you enter the room. Never usually wears makeup, but does when she comes here. I thought it best to do my due diligence. She's always telling me how things are these days, that one should never assume someone else's preferences. I could vaguely picture the woman who'd sat at his bedside. My age-ish, blonde. Nothing more stuck out in my mind. I frowned as the machine beeped. 38.1. You're not supposed to talk with this in your mouth, I said, removing it and disposing of the tip. Oh, does it stop working? No, it just makes you even more difficult to understand, I smiled. I was checking to see if you were... He lowered his voice to a whisper. You know, gay. Yes, I understood that part, I said with a small laugh. I dragged the blood pressure monitor towards the bed. I'm not sure your granddaughter would appreciate this conversation. I lifted Mr. Havas's arm and attached the cuff. It hissed as he continued to chat away, revealing that his granddaughter had a degree in engineering, that her last boyfriend was what he called all hat and no cattle, whatever that meant. The reading appeared on the screen. Normal, in most circumstances, but elevated considering the patient's history. It gave me pause for concern. I flagged it on the chart and looped the wires of the machine back up. I refilled his water and handed him his book. All done, Mr. Havas. The consultant will be in to see you later today. I thought about my next patient. The chest tube removal in bed 12. The dressing changes already overdue in bed 1. And then, naturally, my mind fell back to Grace. Our plans for that evening. Same as always. Dinner. Bed. Simple. Perfect.
So I'll tell Ella you're unavailable? Mr. Habers asked. I blinked, bringing myself back to his earlier conversation. Right, that. A few months earlier, I might have been interested. I might have got a number, taken over some food after my shift, had some fun, kept it casual. It didn't interest me in the slightest now. No, I'm absolutely not available, I said. Love, I thought again as I walked away. I'm in love.
Chapter 14. Grace. Now. Some problems are horrendous by nature. Life-threatening, disastrous, deadly. And some problems are blissful. Like my biggest one. I have £15,000 sitting in my bank account that I'm terrified to touch. Rhonda used to tease me that I had a scarcity mindset, that I always thought good things were fleeting. And she was absolutely correct. Because the only thing I do with money is make it disappear. I know this amount could change my life, but I also know I have a far higher chance of squandering my one opportunity to turn things around, given my track record. Thanks to being unemployed, it's not only cash I have to spend, it's also time. I try to be with Dottie as much as I can, keeping her active by taking her for spring strolls along the River Itchen, but after a few weeks she blows me off for salsa classes with Althea, beach trips with Althea, picnics with Althea. I'm glad what I told her about their falling out seems to have prevented it this time around. But geez, what does it say about me that my 75-year-old grandmother has a better social life than I do? Sasha's case, the infamous Hinkler one, is at a critical point. She's out of the house by 5 a.m. I'm lucky if she's back before midnight. I leave her meals in the microwave. She leaves me little notes of appreciation. It's tough and lonely. And the walls whisper Henry's name as I think of how my life was this time before. How he was here, almost daily. Sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night confused and panicked as to why he's not next to me. The same way I did for years after we broke up. I can never sleep when that happens. So I usually pull out my laptop and edit my CV and covering letter for the millionth time. As if a sparkly new adjective can save me. But it eventually pays off. It's late April when I get a call out of the blue from a guy who owns a local meat-free diner, the Happy Tofu. It's a small gig, one of those fancy takeaway places with a few seats out front. The sort of business I should probably have started. Small. Niche. Hello, hindsight. He asks me to come in a fortnight later for a test cook, and the mere thought of finally having a job where I'm not professionally obliged to taste test meat has me bouncing with excitement. I spend all my time recreating their dishes, making sure I get the flavour balance right, adding sweet to the salty, zing to the bland. My kitchen is chock full of Tupperware boxes of vegan food. What the... Sasha yells 3 days later when she opens the refrigerator door and the fruits of my labour tumble onto her silk shirt. Thankfully, the lids stay on. She stares at the stacked shelves. Hungry by any chance? I laugh. A little peckish. She opens a tub of spicy green beans, sniffs it, and grabs a fork. She sits next to me at the table, toeing off her heels with a sigh. Tough day at work? I ask. Tough year. She takes a bite. I'm glad to see you're cooking proper food again. Don't get me wrong. I love sandwiches and crisps as much as the next girl, but I was getting a little worried there for a second. I tell her about my interview. Why didn't you say? I feel like I've barely seen you. I know, she says guiltily. And not for the hours she's been putting in at the firm, but because she's starting to prefer sleeping at Roman's, starting to consider moving out. She flutters her eyelashes as she bites into the surprise crushed edamame at the bottom. Well, if this is anything to go by, they have to give you the job, she says. What are you going to do with all this food? I was going to offer you some to take to your office. She tuts doubtfully. I'm in court, otherwise I would. She takes another bite and I see the moment the idea comes to her. I know. Ali and Marcus were asking about plans tomorrow night. Why don't we host a dinner party? You can cook. Use up this delicious food. I'll do the wine. After the races, I'd planned to keep Henry at arm's length. No way was I confident I could turn him down twice. But it seemed fate, okay, Sasha, had other plans. She'd organised group cinema trips, Sunday lunches, and one only a little bit awkward afternoon in the pub, where I sat next to Henry and felt him disarm me, one sweet, funny story at a time. I swear, if I hadn't heard it before, the tale of how he'd carried a patient and their life-saving apparatus down 7 flights of stairs during a power cut would have had me crushing on him all over again. I fire off an invite to the group chat, which Marcus has proudly named Mr. Shag, because it's an anagram of all our first initials. Everyone is enthusiastic. Free food will do that, I find. A text comes to me separately later, while I'm getting ready for bed. Grace, it reads, I'm stuck on shift tomorrow, gutted to be missing out. I'm desperate to try this cooking I've heard so much about. Another time? It's Henry. I tell myself I'm not disappointed, that seeing him inside this house after all this time would be like strapping myself to an emotional roller coaster. I reply with a casual, sure thing. Then I scroll up through our recent exchanges. I smile at the pictures he sent me of posters in the hospital about how to perform the Heimlich manoeuvre, circling in red the first step. Confirm patient is choking. At the pictures I sent back of drained beetroot juice, captioned, Felicity was here. There's light conversation sprinkled through the gentle teasing. The first step before flirting. There's no disputing it. Henry Dunn is officially in my life again. Shit. I know I can't let this progress. I know it needs to stay exactly where it is. Friendship. So I open the conversation with the other person I've been texting. Reese. He suggested a few times that we meet for drinks, but I've always made an excuse before now. I need to move on. I invite him to join us for dinner. He replies quickly, agreeing. I spend the next day cooking. I warm some of the dishes from my interview prep and make fresh ones. All vegetarian, some experimental vegan ones. My favourite. The type of food I always wanted the lucky one to serve, before a well-meaning bank manager told me the most successful businesses have mass appeal, and I would have done anything to be successful. I often wonder what would have happened if I'd believed in my vision, if I'd had the courage to do things my way. I guess I'll never know. Sasha works until late, then runs in at 7 on the dot and tells me she needs 2 minutes, this means 20, and she'll be ready. Reese arrives not long after. I invited him to arrive before everyone else, a decision I second guess until he walks in and swoops me into his arms and smiles like he's been waiting all day to see me, and the flurry of nerves dissipates. I'd forgotten how cute he is. In comparison to Henry, who is jaw-droppingly attractive, Reese has a different way about him. Little dimples and floppy golden hair. The kind of guy you'd describe as cheeky. He tells me I look nice, then rolls up his shirt sleeves and dives right into setting the table, without being asked. Sasha appears downstairs and stops in her tracks when she sees him. She gives me an approving smile as she watches Reese light the candles. Domesticated, she silently mouths while giving me a thumbs up. I laugh. He's laying the table. Let's not give him a medal just yet, I whisper. Let's save that for when he lays you, she replies, far too loud. Roman arrives next, with tulips for Sasha and wine for me. He tells us he's been stuck in editing hell for the last few days, and this is the first time he's left the house. He looks exhausted, a tinge of worry in his eyes. I want to tell Roman that it will all work out, that this is about to be one of the most exciting books of his entire career. But I can't. So instead, I hand him a glass of wine and tell him he's more talented than he realises. I knew I always liked you, G, he replies. I'm pouring a chickpea salad into a pretty bowl when Reese comes up behind me. Anything else I can help with? Sure, I say. Those roasted parsnips need dressing with more honey and some sesame seeds, and then the mushrooms need sautéing. I also need to tempura those... I stop talking when I realise Reese is watching me with alarm. I've slipped into chef mode, which most people find a tad irritating. Sorry, I'm being bossy. He takes the mandolin from the counter. How about you crack on with all that and I keep it simple? Sliced? Grated? He asks, nodding at the bag of carrots in front of me. I smile. Sliced, please. Then added to this. No problem. Rhys gives me a brief kiss, then pulls back with a confident smile. For what it's worth, Bossy Grace is pretty damn hot, he says. I feel the blush spread across my chest as I stare into his blue eyes. It wasn't the type of first kiss that stops time, but it was enough to get the adrenaline stirring. Potential. That's enough right now. The doorbell rings and I leave his side to answer it, greeting Ali and Marcus with welcoming hugs. I usher them inside and close the door, only to have it hit someone's large foot. Henry's. He steals every ounce of breath in my lungs. Oh, you, I say, like a warbling fool. A-E, he finishes, as if we're playing a game of name the vowels. He looks so handsome. His hair neat, the same white shirt he wore on our first date, his skin all fresh and glowy. He hands me a bottle of what is, unbeknown to him, my favourite red wine. Someone asked me to swap shifts, so I figured it would be okay to tag along, Henry says, smiling, until he spots Rhys in the kitchen, wearing my apron, grating a carrot, looking right at home. The words, I need to be single, clang inside my brain. I'm not prepared for the way the discomfort ripples across his face, the way he swallows, then composes himself. I hope that's not a problem. More the merrier, Rhys calls, making it sound like he lives here too. For a first date, he's giving off serious relationship vibes, and for all Henry knows, that could be the case. Judging from his expression, that's exactly what he's thinking. But still, Henry is courteous. He greets Rhys the same way he does Roman and Sasha, warmly. He tells him it's nice to see him again, and Rhys asks if they've already met. I can't decide whether he's being forgetful or passive-aggressive. My stress levels hit the ceiling. Wine, anyone? I ask. I circle my little dining table as everyone gets seated, knees and elbows bumping. A generous pour for all except Henry, who declares he's sticking to soft drinks tonight. Could do without the hangover, he declares. What's with all the vegetables? Marcus pokes at my maple roasted cauliflower with mint and rosemary crumble. Are you expecting rabbits? Mikael, rein it in, okay? Henry snaps. I give him a half smile of appreciation. Mikael? Marcus laughs back. And instantly, Henry's defense of me is forgotten in favor of his tiny slip up. Who the hell is Mikael? Henry's cheeks pinch with red. I meant Marcus. Sorry, long week at work. Okay then, Marcus replies, finishing half a glass of wine in one gulp. I'll be sure to tell Mikael to rein it in and not mock the delicious herbivore cuisine. He's a bit of a dick about it, but after a quiet word in his ear from Ali, Marcus quits his complaining and we eat. My mini vegan burgers go down the best, with the group clearing an entire serving plate of them and the leftovers I'd already stashed in the fridge for my lunch tomorrow. Once Rhys downs his cutlery, telling me how much he loved my cooking, he reaches over to hold my hand. I'm not the only one who notices the way Henry's eyes home in on our interlaced fingers, but the conversation remains bright. Sasha talks about the Hinkler case, which is going better than she ever imagined. Her client and her employers are thrilled with the press coverage they're getting. A big industry magazine has floated the idea of profiling her if the result swings her way. She dismisses it as a long shot, says even if it happens, she'll be buried in the back. Little does Sasha know that she'll grace the cover, making her only the third black woman to do so. Then she tells us what I've known all along, that she's thinking of launching her own law firm. I jump with excitement for all the amazing things I know are going to happen for her again, that I'll get to live through for the second time. The rest of the table is as encouraging, thinking of only mildly rude and silly puns for her company title. Law and Disorder, Case and Conqueror, Sasha Lissiter. Sasha laughs, but I can see in her eyes what she wants. Her name on the wall. She deserves nothing less. How's things at the hospital? Ali asks Henry. Surprisingly good, he says. It's full on, always is. but had some wins this week. Henry sits a little taller. I've seen this side of him before. The unabashed pride, the reverential joy when he talks about his job. It was always one of my favourite things about him. My brother is a doctor up north, Rhys says. Where'd you study? I'm a nurse, Henry corrects him. There's still pride there, but I notice the clipped edge to his voice. Rhys stifles a laugh. It makes me like him a lot less.
Oh, my mistake. Sorry.
Nothing to apologise for, Henry replies.
Anyway, Marcus cuts through the tension. I had an epic day at work. Saved a boy from drowning in a well.
Ali gives him a puzzled look. You work in IT recruitment?
I know, I felt left out. You and Sasha changing lives, Roman creating great literature, Henry keeping hearts beating. Sending a few emails doesn't feel half as impressive.
Don't forget about Grace keeping us nourished, Sasha says, raising her glass to me. It's not half as important, but it's nice to be acknowledged. I tip my glass back. I'm just saying.
Marcus pops a courgette fritter into his mouth. We've got it good, guys. In our 20s, nailing life, really ain't as bad as people say.
Is this Marcus's way of being philosophical? Roman asks.
Damn straight, and I think we should celebrate, he replies.
Oh no,
I know where this is going. The same place all nights end when you're 25.
Let's go to a club, Marcus chimes.
No, Henry and I both say, at the same time everyone else says, yes! We look at each other across the table. I have a vivid memory from before, of him telling me he'd grown out of clubbing a few years earlier. How there were only so many nights of pounding music and watered-down drinks that a person could tolerate before they'd had enough. I didn't understand him at the time, but now I've got the mind of a 30-year-old. I know the price of a night of clubbing, a 2-day hangover of doom, is far too high. Marcus begins talking about how he knows a guy who can get us in with queue jump and free entry. Words I feel like I haven't heard in forever. I think I replace them in my vocabulary with bed by 10. Rhys tugs on my arm. Now that I notice it, his palm is awfully sweaty.
Come on, babe. It'll be fun, he says.
Babe? Already?
I'm tired, is all, I say. Not sure I fancy it.
Same, Henry replies.
Ali laughs.
That's settled then. We'll all go clubbing and you two old folks can stay here and do the washing up.
Henry is still watching me. Home. Alone, with him, in the kitchen. I picture his lips drenched in melted chocolate. It's so real to me, I can taste it.
Fine, I'll go, I say quickly, standing to join everyone as they finish what's left of their drinks and grab their shoes. Even Henry.
I thought you weren't coming, I ask him, while the rest of the group bundles through the front door. Henry laughs with an exhausted sigh.
You're only young once.
If only that were true. We walk through an ordinary-looking front door that turns out to be a portal to another world. A sticky one that smells of cheap spirits and a little like body odour. It's an enormous club, lit in shades of pink and purple. And thanks to Marcus's connections, we get a table in the corner. I'll admit, it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. After an hour of chatting, singing and dancing, Marcus goes to talk to his friend. He comes back to the table, says something in Ali's ear, then disappears.
Where's he gone? I ask her.
VIP. The muscle in her jaw tightens.
Nice of him to invite us, Henry says with a laugh.
He did, Ali replies. Well, he invited me, but I said no. I want to stay with you guys. Even though I've never lived this night before, in this club at least, I can see exactly where this is going. Marcus in VIP, living it up. Ali sitting out here with us, fretting. She trusts him, for now anyway. But the seeds of doubt are sprouting, and she has a point. What is her boyfriend doing, ditching his girlfriend and her friends on a night out like this? Did he orchestrate this whole outing so he could do whatever he's doing behind that curtain? Tool. I slide next to Ali, trying to lift her mood.
How's things? She looks longingly at the curtain. She knows what I'm really asking. That was a dick move, wasn't it? I nod. A little. Do you think he likes me? Ali puts her head in her hands and sighs. At least, I think she does. It's hard to tell over the blaring music. Christ, I sound like such a teenager. Ugh, I hate it. I don't get like this over guys, I swear. I'm usually the one playing it cool, letting them chase me. But you really like him. I really do. She slumps against me. I've started seeing a therapist. Oh. I wasn't expecting her to say that, and for some reason it startles me. Ali and I aren't that close. We weren't before. And this feels too intimate to share, especially given she's having to shout it in my ear. Henry talked me into going. He wouldn't stop banging on about it. And I was a bit reluctant, but it's really helping. The therapist says it's probably because of my upbringing that I have an anxious attachment style. Your upbringing? Yeah, in foster care. I was in and out of the system since I was 10. I sit back a little. Ali has this regal air about her. She always wears designer clothes, has pristine hair and makeup. She obviously makes good money at the firm. But the way she carries herself, with such unwavering confidence, I naturally assume she came from some big wealthy family up north. Wow. I really misjudged her. I thought Henry might have told you. He said you two talk all the time. She sips her drink. When I look at him across the table, he seems oblivious to what's going on. No. I think of our never-ending text conversations. Well, we do, I correct, but only chit-chat. He's never told me anything important like that. Ever, I realise. Oh, well, I was. And my therapist reckons that's why I've fallen so hard for Marcus. Because now I'm the one doing the chasing. And it's what I'm used to. What with never having had a parent to love me. She laughs like it was an obvious joke. But my insides recoil. Ali, I say, a little breathless. I have a complicated relationship with my own parents. But for all my complaints, it's nothing really. I was always safe. They cared for me, in their own weird, difficult way. And I had Dottie. But this... I'm struck with a wave of sympathy. Join Marcus. We'll be fine out here. No, no, I agreed to stay with you all. We're having fun. She lifts a shot glass to the group and chugs it back. Whis does the same in return. That's when I notice Sasha and Roman locked into a deep conversation. She's talking into his ear. He's got a deep frown. Seriously, I say to Ali, life is too short to deny yourself what you want. Spend the night with him. You can do this with us any other time. Ali looks once more at the curtain, then at me, with the most grateful smile on her face. Thank you, Grace. She hugs me and says goodbye to the group before heading over to the VIP section. Henry asks me where she's gone, but I can't reply to him because I'm too focused on Sasha and the giant tears rolling down her face. Sasha is always composed. I have only seen her cry 3 times. The day we moved into our house and found a woodlouse infestation in the living room, she hates bugs. When she and Roman had their first ever fight, over something so silly I can hardly recall it now, and when she thought she might never be able to have children. I know I'm not a superhero, that I don't have special powers, but if this glitch allows me to stop a single tear falling from Sasha, it will all be worth it. Sasha! I'm next to her instantly, my knees on the sticky carpet. What is it? What's wrong? Talk to me. She lifts her head to look at me, takes a deep breath, then says with a violent howl, I'm so happy! I don't breathe. Did you say happy? She nods. I look at Roman, who shrugs helplessly. I feel like my life is complete. Since our little group formed, it's like we're a new family. I love you all so, so much. All of us release a confused but relieved laugh. Roman wipes away a tear and kisses her temple. think that last shot was Sasha's limit, he says lovingly. I'm inclined to agree. There's some gentle coaxing where we advise Sasha it might be time to call it tonight, which she insists it isn't, until she stands, wobbles, and almost knocks over the table, and all the drinks, onto the floor. We hug them goodbye, and Sasha drunkenly dances her way across the club to the exit. The wrong one. Roman puts her back on course, and they disappear out the open front door. I see Sasha being cradled by Roman as he flags down a taxi. I'm so, so, so glad she has him. And then there were three, Henry says. The only person not noticing the tension is Reese, who is too busy staring at the bar. He moves to the seat next to me, plants a kiss on the side of my face, then looks at the bar again. So how is work? Henry asks him. It's nice that he's making an effort. Reese doesn't reply. I tell myself he hasn't heard Henry over the music, even though I heard him fine. I follow my gaze to see what's caught Reese's attention. There's a group of people laughing, popping champagne corks. What is it? I ask. Oh, shit, I'm being rude. Reese shakes his head. I've spotted a colleague at the bar that I haven't seen in forever, he says to me. Do you mind if I... Go, go, I tell him happily. I'll be right here. He moves behind us, chatting to a beautiful woman with long blonde hair, who's wearing a fitted black dress that shows off her figure. More curves than a country lane. I didn't know she was the colleague. I figured it was the smartly dressed guy standing next to her. Reese wraps his arms around her. I don't greet my colleagues like that. If I had any... My eyes narrow on his fingers, tracing swirls on her hips, the way he leans super close to her ear to talk. I turn away. Stop it, Grace. You don't do this anymore. I take a swig of my drink while Henry watches me. Friend from work, I say, before he can ask. The song changes, another pulsing dance tune. And oh my God, I never noticed how many songs from this time were about kissing and screwing. Henry and I sit like two divorced parents outside their child's classroom at parents' evening, hands on laps, eyes everywhere but each other. I fight the awkwardness by excusing myself to the ladies' room. There's a long queue and it smells of acidic cherry shooters. Oh my God, did you see Reese Campbell from the news out there? He is disgracefully hot, shouts a girl from a cubicle. Totally, another voice adds. What I would give to have him bend me over that news desk. God, yeah, the first girl says. Newsflash, this just in. A gaggle of girls burst into laughter, and I do too. That girl he's with is lucky as hell. That girl? Lucky, huh? It hits me like warm sunshine. I don't think I've ever even thought of myself as lucky before. The lucky one was more like the plagued one. When I leave the toilets, I walk straight towards Reese, towards my new future. Only to stop in my tracks when I see the way he's whispering in the blonde's ear, the way she's curling into him. This looks mighty unprofessional. Reese laughs at something, then he slides his hands to the small of her back, pressing her hips towards his, and they're kissing. In front of me, my date is kissing someone else. I feel Henry appear beside me, staring at the same thing I am. Absolute twat. He says, handing me a plastic cup of vodka and coke. It smells like gasoline. I drink the whole thing while I watch them grind. This is totally humiliating. I'm blinking back tears. I've got sparks in my chest. The bad kind. The kind that make you think death is close. And, oh well, would that be so bad right now? Stop it, Henry says. Stop what? Whatever you're thinking right now. He points to the horny couple. That isn't about you. It sure feels like it. First Jason, now Reese. Do I give off some type of doormat energy? Like I'm happy to be a placeholder until someone better comes along? I yell. You don't, he says quietly. I realise how uncomfortable I've made this situation. Well, whatever. I'm over it already, I say. I lean over the opposite bar. Turning my back to the lovebirds, I put my arm out to order another drink, trying to stop my knees from bouncing. Henry leans next to me. You don't have to do that, you know. Not with me. What am I doing? The barman hands me my drink and Henry orders a water. I feel bad for not getting him one. Acting like everything is fine. Like you're not struggling. I narrow my eyes. Spotlights flicker across his face. What makes you think you have me all figured out? Call it a hunch, he says. It's as if you think pretending everything is okay will make it so. Take my advice. It doesn't. You're better off letting it all out. Henry takes his drink from the bar, and we turn to face the scene again. Reese and the mystery girl have retreated to a sofa on the edge of the dance floor, sipping from the same cup between kisses. What should I do then? Go over and throw my drink in his face? Henry laughs. It would make me happy, that's for sure. I think about it for a second. The satisfaction of seeing Reese's face dripping in vodka and coke. Nothing wrong with a bit of revenge, Henry says. Why am I not surprised you feel that way? I say under my breath. What? I said, what would you do if this were your date? He knows I'm lying, but he lets it go, smirking as his eyes skate over my neck, down my collarbone, to the exposed skin under my low-cut top. They flash to mine again, fire behind them. Something like this. Henry puts our drinks on the bar, then takes my hand. As he pulls me across the dance floor, the warmth between us, circuiting through him, then back to me, makes every inch of my skin glow. He stops in front of the sofa Reese is on. Not that Reese notices. I'm not even sure Henry does. Because he locks his eyes on me. Stern. Focused. Tell me to stop and I will, he says. He waits for me to nod, before slowly bringing his fingertips to the base of my neck. I close my eyes. I'm sure there are other people in this club, that there was music playing and voices screaming. But now there's nothing but the gentle tingle against my skin. The warm, heavenly scent of his aftershave filling my nose. I'm so lost in my head. I think I'm dreaming. That I'm still lying face down on my kitchen floor, seeing stars. His fingers trace loops over me. My shoulders, down my arms, before finding my hips. He envelops them, squeezing tight. If I were in a dream, I'd be awake now. That would be the pinch to bring me around, surely. When I open my eyes, I'm still in the club, in front of him. He's got a drugged look in his eyes, high on me, a small smile on his perfect lips. What are we doing? My voice is rough, unmeasured. In contrast, Henry's is calm and collected. Let's show Reese he isn't the only one who can score on a date. I sneak a glance again at Reese. I'm the last person on his mind. I'm not sure that's going to work. Henry scoops my hair into his fist, gently tugging my head back as he plants a slow, firm kiss below my ear. My eyelids flutter at the heat of his mouth. My entire body thrums. I gasp or groan. I'm not sure. Whatever I was about to say, even what my name is, evaporates from my mind. I grip the firm skin of his back. Henry. I breathe his name like a prayer. This is a mistake, is what I should say. Dangerous. But I don't. I keep the sentence unended, like I wish our love story was, and throw my head back so he can kiss more of my skin. He does. Wet pressure along my collarbone, up to my earlobes, all while he's still gently pulling on my hair. Tingles erupt over my scalp, and I shudder against him, burning where his lips touch, wishing they were everywhere. We're pressed together, every soft angle of me close against every hard one of his. But when Henry swoops his arms around, cupping my arse, pulling me closer, somehow closer, it's still not enough. In some distant part of my brain, I'm screaming at myself to stop this, that my heart can't take it. That I won't survive a second time. But all those thoughts are replaced with the sensation of him hard on my hip, the hundred ways he's saying my name into my ear. I pull back so we're nose to nose. His hands are all over my skin,
and I realise I've snuck underneath his shirt, that I'm gripping at the waistband of his jeans. He looks at me. The green of his eyes has been swallowed by his pupils. His lips are pink. "You okay?" he breathes. My disorientated nod earns me a full smile, then more kisses. Along my jaw, my neck, my collarbone. But never my lips. Never across that line. I cut a glance to Rhys. He's still got his hands around his so-called colleague, but he's noticed Henry and me. "He's watching," I say. Henry's nose brushes mine. I forgot he was even here. My entire universe revolves around the way Henry bites his bottom lip, focusing only on my mouth. And I can't remember a single reason we shouldn't do this. All the tears and heartache that will surely follow dissolve like a bad dream. Distorted, surreal, forgotten. He takes my earlobe in his teeth. I dig my nails into his neck. "This is," I gasp, "incredible." Henry whispers into my ear, thick and gruff. "You feel unreal, Grace." The words hit low in my stomach. My eyes roll back so hard I don't even notice Rhys standing next to us. "So I'm going to take off," Rhys says. My senses return with raging clarity. I let go of Henry like he's scorching my skin. Bit awkward, but I didn't want to be rude and leave without saying something.
He didn't want to be rude. Did I hear that right?
I laugh, but Henry doesn't. "Have a good evening, Rhys," I reply. "Likewise," he says, walking hand in hand with the girl as he leaves. I turn back to Henry, who's now a foot away from me. The hunger is gone, replaced with something heavier than longing. I begin. He lifts a hand, filling the space between us, then thinks better of it and pulls away again. "We should probably find Ali and Marcus," he says.
"Actually, I think I'm ready to call it a night."
Henry nods. It's raining when we leave the club. Raucous crowds line up outside takeaway shops. The smell of cigarette smoke fills the air. What I wouldn't give for my comfy slippers and a hot chocolate. But the queue for a taxi is long and slow. There's no chance of that for at least an hour.
"We could walk," Henry says.
"It's pouring."
"We're getting wet in the queue anyway. Might as well make the best of it."
He shrugs, walking along the street as if it were a glorious summer day, while I duck in and out of doorways seeking seconds of relief from the flooded sky. "Besides, I love the rain."
"No one loves the rain," I reply.
"Sure they do. It's refreshing, soothing, calming. What's not to love?" "The ice-cold droplets down my back, for one," I say. When we stop at a crossing, Henry shoulders out of his jacket and wraps it around me. He keeps his hands on the tops of my arms, then his eyes fall to my neck, and I can feel the addictive heat of his mouth again. Tingles spread from my ears to my fingertips. "Sorry if I overstepped earlier. I got a little carried away."
"You didn't," I say.
"I hate the thought of that dick acting like he'd got one over on you."
"Mighty honourable of you."
"There were some dishonourable intentions mixed in there too." His cheeks flush. A consequence of the cold air? Or the fact he's still not taking his hands from me? I'm not sure.
"He did me a favour," I say.
"Better to find out now than before it got serious."
"You guys weren't serious?"
His eyes narrow. "I got the impression..." "Well, as you can probably tell, I don't think Rhys is one to move slowly." At the mention of Rhys's name, Henry lets me go, shoving his hands in his pockets. We cross the road.
"And you?"
he asks on the other side. "Are you the sort of person who jumps in, or stands on the edge with your toes in the water?"
I can't figure out why he's asking me this.
"I've done both," I say. "I've had relationships where I've been a little bit hesitant, waiting and hoping for this feeling I'm supposed to feel to arrive. And then I've had the opposite. Knowing from day one that it was special. Rushing in, saying, 'I love you,' way too fast." I watch his expression closely. He winces, but I can't tell if it's at my words or a fresh lashing of rain. I knew early on that he had an aversion to "I love yous."
One day, he waited for me outside Le Bleu. We'd had a private event, a proposal. Giant foil balloons floated above the bar. The words, "I love you," reflected on all the shiny surfaces. I saw the way his lip curled in distaste when he saw them. The way he'd grimace when we watched couples making sweeping declarations at the end of movies. I always thought it was some silly discomfort, that he'd say it eventually, when he felt it. But he never did. So it went unsaid. Actions are supposed to speak louder than words. So why was I left searching the ruins of us for clues he loved me? "What about you?" I say. "Do you rush in?" "Depends on the person," he says casually. "When you know, as the saying goes. I think when you feel that way, you should open yourself up. Come what may. Come what may." I've heard those words from him before. Outside Le Bleu. The night he turned up with the redhead who screamed at me across the restaurant. It was how Henry convinced me to say yes to going out with him. Hearing them again now, in a different context, makes me feel strangely sad, like the long drive home after the thrill of a theme park. "Even if you know it will end in disaster?" I ask. "Pessimist," he teases, and I laugh. "I'm just saying, someone always ends up with a broken heart. You don't believe in happy ever after?" "Believe," I say, "like believing in fairy tales and the tooth fairy. Reality isn't built for happy ever after. And don't say I'm a pessimist," I warn. He points to his closed mouth. "It's about growing up, like with my winnings," I say. "Years ago, I'd have thrown it all away, probably with some big idea, got in way over my head and ruined everything." "And now?" he asks. "Now I've put aside 12 months' worth of rent and bills and put the rest in a savings account. I'm not exactly sure what for just yet." Henry smiles, lifting his arms to the sky. His shirt sags from his skin like a wet dishcloth. "For the rainy days," he replies with a goofy grin. We take a shortcut through a park, squeezing through a worn gap in the fence. The ground is squishy underfoot. My fingers burn from the cold. I could be anywhere in the world right now, spending my winnings, sunbathing in the Bahamas, eating gelato in Milan, drinking wine in the south of France. Yet here I am, with Henry, again. Do you ever look back on your younger self, on some of the decisions you made, and wonder what on earth you were thinking? I ask him. "Yeah," he says, "often." It's weird, isn't it? How something I did, things I felt so certain of at the time, now feel like I'm looking back on another life, another reality. I feel like you're referring to something specific. "Multiple things," I reply. Henry's eyebrow rises with interest. "Men, my job, family, the holy stress trinity." "I spend my whole adult life training to be a chef, and I know I can cook, but so can lots of people. Does that mean it's what I'm supposed to be doing? What if I'm a crazy talented synchronized swimmer and I don't know because I'd never tried it? Because I was too scared to keep my head under the water for long enough. I never tried anything else. Why?" "Because you're meant to be a chef," he says. "I know you are. No one loves cooking like you do. Watching you tonight, you came alive. The only thing I've ever felt that passionate about was..." He pauses, as if he can't think of a single thing that's lit him up that way. He clears his throat. "Anyway, that matters." I concede he might be right. "And men," I say, stepping around a boggy puddle in the grass. "There have been times I've seen the red flags like signs on the motorway, but I've ignored them. Times when I've screwed up so badly, I think I'll hate myself forever. But younger me had this blind faith that it would all work out. You're right. I am a pessimist. I've seen too much. I know too much. I'm bitter and jealous. Jealous of the me years ago who could fall in love without even considering the possibility of getting emotionally obliterated. I've broken hearts and had my heart broken too," he says quietly. I don't think it's possible to date and not end up both the hero and the villain at some point. But you have to make the conscious decision to move on and do it, no matter what. We reach a locked gate on the other side of the park. Henry climbs over first and holds his hand out for me. I wobble a little. Alcohol, high heels, and spraying water. I feel like I'm on an assault course. Henry steadies me, gripping my hips. His fingers slip a little, graze over my stomach. When I'm safely on the ground, he keeps them there, a few beats too long. I look into his eyes and feel an unfurling in my chest, a flower in bloom, the heat of his emerald gaze lighting fires low in my gut. This is the Henry I fell in love with that earnest smile and those wise words. The only man I never had to try to fall for. A love as inevitable as the rain surrounding us. But how do I forget? I ask. Technically, I plead. I'm still trying to figure that one out. Henry jerks his shoulder. Come on, he says. I've seen what hypothermia does to the heart. Not for me, thanks. We take the last few roads quickly after that, stopping at the end of my driveway with pink cheeks and ears. Thanks for walking me home. No problem, he says. There's a moment's pause where neither of us knows what to say. The tension ripples between the raindrops. He begins to talk and stops himself with a resigned headshake. Good night, Grace. I say goodnight as he walks away, and I put my key in the door. You said you didn't want a date. Sorry? I turn around to see Henry back at the end of the driveway, a perfect circle of streetlight above lighting him in an ethereal glow. You said you wanted to be single. Then I walk in your house tonight and you're with someone else. My stomach tenses. He has every right to say this, but inside I'm begging him not to. If he pulls at this thread, there's every chance I'll unravel. I know, I say guiltily. So it's me you don't want to date. He takes two steps towards me. I can see the hurt in his eyes, his insecurities shining through, no longer hidden. I need to know, for my sanity. He runs a hand through his wet hair, and I see us in the shower that first night, 5 years ago. I see us in bed afterwards, damp bedsheets sticking to our naked skin. I close my eyes and wish with everything I have that Henry could see what I see. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Then he'd know why we can't do this again. Like on the escalator at the train station, he'd know all the reasons we can't say hello. Because the goodbye is too fucking painful. He steps closer, a sense of urgency, as if the next words out of my mouth will make or break him. Henry, We lock eyes. I have no excuses. No sense. I kiss him. Henry pulls back, my breath held at the top of my lungs as he searches my eyes for something. Then in one quick movement, he engulfs both my palms in his hand, raises them above my head, stepping me backwards until I collide with the hardwood of my front door. The back of my body is cold, wet, and shivering, but I'm burning everywhere our bodies meet. He deepens his kiss, and my heart throbs with tenderness. This kiss is so Henry. Everything about it. Pleasure and pain. It's as if he's waited 5 years and a few months to do this again, and now that he is, he's not going to waste a split second of it questioning why. But then I realize that's how I'm kissing him, as if all of it happened, and I'm okay with it, pretending we've forgiven each other, smoothing over our rough edges. But it's not true. I'll never forget. I'll never forgive. What I did. What he did. What we did to each other. Henry keeps one hand on mine, pinning me in place, while the other gently skates under my top, a trail of goosebumps as he explores, groaning my name as he goes. I try and focus on the sound, the way he's telling me with his mouth how much he wants me. But all I can see are tears. I hear curses and cries. How could you do this to me? Slowly, reluctantly, I end the kiss. Grace,
he says on a shallow exhale. I've never felt anything like this. Like you. His eyes dart to mine and I can see the indecision. Unsure if he should force those words back inside or release everything that wants to follow. I need to think about this, I say. Before... Of course. Take as long as you need. I won't make another move unless you ask me to. Henry nods against me. I kiss him once more, slow and deep, pretending for a second that we are just two people, crazy about each other, with nothing to lose and everything to gain. I'd never break your heart, Grace. Maybe I'd break yours, I whisper back. Henry steps away from me, wiping rain from his face, tugging at the drenched collar of his white shirt. Before he turns to leave, he gives me one last look with a steely expression and says, "Worth it."
Chapter 15. Henry, 5 years earlier. With the summer came another milestone, meeting the parents. Or, as Grace had told me weeks earlier, meeting the most important person in her life, her grandmother, Dottie. Grace and I didn't talk much about her own parents, and it was hardly a subject that I was desperate to bring up, given my situation and how my lie was now hanging over me like a guillotine. But I knew they were still together, that they were highly successful and were off and out of the country. Something that sounded like it had been happening for as long as Grace could remember, because from the way she talked about her childhood, anyone would think she'd grown up entirely in this Grecian-looking bungalow. We arrived in the peak of the midday heat on a Saturday in June. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't nervous. I'd worn my best shirt and jeans, despite it being shorts weather. I fiddled with my sleeve. Grace told me to relax. I've never met a girlfriend's family before. Well, the only thing you need to know is that the more she grills you, the more she likes you, Grace said, kissing my cheek. So, this might get rough. A small old lady with white hair opened the door. She had on a paisley patterned housecoat. It was the sort of thing you'd expect someone to be embarrassed to be caught wearing in the middle of the day, but she showed no shame. This must be Herbert. Henry, Dottie, Grace corrected. She scrutinized me with her blue eyes. Really? He looks more like a Herbert. Definitely Henry, I said. Although it's been a long time since I saw my birth certificate.